welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. Christian Fiedler joins us for a chat about his projects, in particular his rather brilliant solograph, Beacons Through Time project. Hello, and welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. This is show 133, and recording this as of 21st of August 2023, if you're listening into the future, you wouldn't be listening into the past, would you? So, and it's been a few months, so that's really why I was just referencing that. It's been May since the show was out, so we'd like to thank the awesome Mike Walker of Walker Cameras for coming on. I've been trying to persuade Mike to come on the show for such a long time, long-term fan of his 4x5 pinhole camera. Excellent, excellent device. And what a lovely man. So thanks, Mike. Anyway, we're joined tonight by a gent who was probably brought to my attention a while back, possibly by Heather, I've forgotten how to pronounce her surname. Palacek, is it? I think it is. Anyway, Heather. I got a from our guest there, so I got the name right. Yep. And Heather, if you go back a few shows, she's a part of a little pinhole collective club in New Jersey. And our guest, Christian Fiedler, all the way from Morristown, is part of that little group. And she said, you should get Christian on because he's doing all this really cool work with lighthouses. And so I reached out to Christian and he said, well, yeah, maybe later in the summer when I've done a bit more. So the summer's here and here we are. So welcome, Christian. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well. And I have done a bit more since then. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on today.
That's okay. So you're in Morris County, which is in, I can't actually say New Jersey without putting on one of those, saying New Jersey. But you don't sound at all like that, do you?
Not a lot of us do, frankly.
Do you not?
I feel like that accent is sadly becoming more and more diminished. I don't know. I know very few people who sound like that here, sadly.
Okay, so what's Morristown like then?
Oh, it's great. It's Morristown is right in the middle of North Jersey. It's kind of like right on the edge of the suburban, urban, busier part of New Jersey, right as it falls off into like just quiet farms and fields. We do have farms here in New Jersey. People don't know that. But so it's next. It's green. It is a garden state, but there's still a lot going on. And it's for New Jersey standards.
And if you want to head in towards New York City, how long does that take you?
Oh, 45 minutes on the express train, maybe an hour.
There you go.
So, not bad.
Do you ever go? See, if I lived where you, it's like, so you're in a sort of similar commuting distance as I am to London, and I don't go into London nearly enough as I ought to. Really, I go in to meet up with other analog photographers maybe once or twice a year. So do you go into New York to meet up with other photographers?
It's funny you say that. Like growing up in the shadow of New York, like it's always been there. I've always had access to it. And so like, I don't know. I don't use it as much as I should, frankly. But it is a good resource. I was just at the MoMA recently, actually, the Museum of Modern Art.
Yeah. What's showing there?
Oh, they had a bunch of stuff. They had a whole series on television. I don't think they had any pinhole, but they had a whole series on the fourth floor about like television and its cultural effects. That was really cool. It was good. So I should use the city as a resource more, but I don't know. It's comfy out here in the burbs.
Pinhole photography in cities is just the best thing, isn't it? I think so. You know, it can be so many things to stimulate you. You know?
Yeah, and those wide angles help, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so why don't we kick off in the usual way by you telling us story as much as you can, and how you got into photography, but more importantly, how you got into lensless photography, and then we'll talk about some of your project work that that you've been doing and you're doing.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, the way I got into pinhole is kind of weird. I sort of backed into it. But before then, I've done digital photography for a bit. I probably got into it really seriously 6 or 7 years ago. I shoot Fuji X, those little Fuji crop sensor cameras. I really like them. And I got them to track backpacking trips. So I like backpacking. I like getting outside. And so I got really into photography to help document that. And I had a buddy here who was a Fuji shooter and shot around a lot.
Because on your website, if you ignore the photography side, you've got a lot of stuff about outdoor trails and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Primitivepines.com. That's my little website. My little project site. And yeah, it's, you know, I like doing these, say, 50, 60 mile backpacking trips that take a few days, but a lot of them aren't that well documented. So you find resources online, and I appreciated those. So that was sort of, I like to write little guides for people who might do that and find that. And that's probably the most popular stuff on that little site. But yeah, I've always carried little cameras around to help document things. And Fuji had sort of, in terms of digital camera, it's like kind of on the analog-y side of it. So I've been shooting for a while doing that. And then pinhole, I totally backed into during COVID. That's probably not that weird. I think a lot of people probably got into alternative photography.
Well, it was either that or making sourdough bread, wasn't it?
I did both. Yeah, I went all in on both. It was, for me, it was French baguettes and pinhole photography.
Mm-hmm.
But and here's the other weird thing about me. I don't do a lot of non-solograph pinholes. I was talking to Heather about this recently. I think I've only ever shot one roll just normally through a pinhole camera that wasn't a solograph. And I think it was on Worldwide Pinhole Day here in Morristown like 2 years ago, which is really strange. Almost all my stuff is the super long exposure solograph pics.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I got into that was I must have seen it online and been fascinated by it. Probably right before COVID. And I remember talking to friends and family about it and say, look at these pictures. Isn't this cool? Look at these arcs of the sun. You got these people in Barcelona and Poland, and look at this guy. I think I saw Justin Quinnell's video, how to make a 6 month solar camera, like video on YouTube.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, I could do this. And then COVID hit, and all of a sudden I found myself with all this time and pent up energy. And so a friend of mine, my friend Doug and I, who's a childhood friend, we just kind of went all in on it. And it was a wonderful thing to do during those weird times when we couldn't really go outside much and there wasn't a lot of social activity. So sitting around making little cameras and iterating and trying to get better at it and experimenting. And eventually we kind of, from like 2020, 2021, we did this project here in Morris County, very uncreatively named Morris County Solographs.
So that's one of your, if you go to primitivepines.com, that's one of the projects that you got.
Yeah, and that was my first go at it. And yeah.
Well, that and the panoramics. We'll talk about the panoramics. I know it's not pinhole, but we'll talk about those in a minute.
Yeah, they're fun too.
Yeah.
But the so we got into it that way. Mostly making them out of beer cans, which that
so
was
just let me just stop you there and sure. Ask some what I would refer to as noddy questions or simple questions. Mm-hmm. And for folks who know what we're just sort of alluding to, then well, we apologize, but there might be someone, hopefully more than one person, who just picked up the Lenses podcast episode 133 for the first time and said, what are they talking about? Okay, I've got a bit of an idea what a pinhole camera is, because it kind of, I maybe learned that in high school. But Christian mentioned much longer time lengths and arcs of the sun and solography. Explain to folks in simple terms what you're talking about.
Yeah, let me think about how to phrase this. A solograph is basically an extremely long exposure, and when I say extreme, like it could be weeks to months to years. Pinhole photograph, and you could do pinhole photography traditionally, and you might have a shutter count of a second or a couple seconds, but with a solograph, you stretch that out really long. Typically, the way this works is using photographic paper, like darkroom paper, which has an ISO mm-hmm. of like one or two. So super not sensitive. And by doing that, it buys you the ability to leave these things out for just an incredible amount of time. I think the world record in the Guinness Book of World Records is, for longest single exposure, is a solograph, if I remember correctly. I think it was a woman in the UK who was doing this as part of like a grad school project and forgot one, and left it up. Have you heard about this?
No, but I'm going to go.
It was actually an astronomy site.
You're saying
it was up for 8 years.
Well, you're saying it with such confidence that it must be true.
Yeah, because I remember reading about this. Yeah, and so basically, we leverage kind of the low sensitivity of darkroom paper as opposed to film or a digital sensor, and the fact that a pinhole by its nature is super, has a really tight aperture, like f/2.56, that they allow you to really stretch that exposure time out. And so the way these cameras work is they're typically placed in situ. So you'll mount them somewhere, you'll tape them to something. And the real magic of it is the sun is one of the few things bright enough to really make a strong impression on the paper in a short bit of time. So you can catch the sun's arcs every day. Imagine it like a rainbow or sort of arcs of the sun as they travel across the sky, low in the winter, high in the summer. And they expose all kinds of things in the foreground. So this is a way to take, maybe one of the only ways to take a single exposure that just stretches into the months. It's not digitally combined images together like traditional time lapse. It's not really, there's really no fooling around with it. It's just a single image that's that long. It's wonderful. It's magic.
It really is. I've only done it once. It's I didn't say I got some half decent results, but I just haven't really got around to pursuing it more. You know, I haven't got the fixation that you have. And I think the images, I think the key to it, the arcs are lovely, but it's combining it with the landscape as well, because you don't just get the arcs of the sun, you're getting the whatever else this solar can is pointing at, be it a building or a lighthouse, as we'll talk about. And of course, the images aren't really, they're more or less being sort of burnt by the sun, aren't they, as opposed to exposed.
I don't develop them.
You take these out of the camera after, say, solstice to solstice or equinox to equinox or whatever the technical term is, and you're just basically scanning it and inverting it. Probably, are you? Is that what you're doing?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So it gets a quick scan. Try to do everything, in dim rooms or in a dark room, ideally. Scan it. You really only get one good scan too, right? Because most scanners use light. And so as they go, they're kind of killing the image as they go. So you get one shot to get a really good scan. Maybe you get a second or third if you mess up on the first, but ideally you want to nail that first scan. And then you invert it. I usually bump up the micro contrast a bit, which is works well with some of these papers that I use, and then that's it.
And the color you end up with on the reversed image, is that normally just a function of the type of paper, or do you think, I'll just play with a few curves or colors and see what that looks like?
I don't usually change the color a lot. So the way it works is because you're inverting it, the warm tone papers become really blue. Sometimes a really deep blue.
Okay. Right.
The cooler papers, like the gray papers, you end up getting yellow. So I think about that quite a bit, actually. Like, you can experiment with a lot of papers. I've probably used a dozen and a half. And then eventually you kind of learn what works and what doesn't. They all have different subtle effects. They all have different colors. I don't typically change them much. I like to kind of show what we get out of the paper.
Yeah. Okay. So you fell into this during COVID and you decided to concentrate on something you knew, which was Morris County.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the Morris County project and really, I know you said the images look great, but what sort of thought process, once you started this, you started getting some images, did that sort of trigger other ideas and other thoughts and projects into your head?
Oh, yeah. So the whole thing's really iterative. I wish I could share with you some of my really early solograph images and how bad they were. The fun piece, the early ones were rough, right? But it's amazing when I just started this and I was looking And I'm like, oh my goodness, I caught the sun's arc and I could see this very shadowy reflection of something. And oh my goodness, it's working. And then slowly, like throughout the whole Morris County project, I just kept iterating, right? So like my designs changed, they got better. We started out with tall boy beer cans, which they work okay. You'll see a lot of solar graphs made out of like a tall drinks can. That's fine. I mean, they're fun to make. But
well, over here you've got a little cottage industry. You know, Mr. Solar Can himself is,
that's right,
you know, sells these things, and mm-hmm. what great gifts they make. And I think the best thing about these, if you buy yourself a kit from solarcan.com or .co.uk, is it comes with this awesome book which tells you all about solography and hints and tips and photographs. So yeah, that beer can. So you started with the beer can?
I was making them myself, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I know.
Which, you know, I had people over, basically. It was an excuse during COVID to sit outside with people in driveways and say, hey, we have to drink a couple beers for my art project, which people were pretty cool with.
But don't crush them up.
Don't crush them, exactly.
There is a tendency.
Yeah.
You know, you Americans are like, you'll be crushing beer cans and spitting tobacco into spittoons all night long.
So yeah, it started with that, and then eventually I started 3D printing them. So again, the more I did this, the more I learned. I got in touch with some of the folks over in Poland who do this, and I loved their, it was really striking to me what they were doing and how sharp it was. So after some conversations, I got tidbits, you know, hey, try doing a semicircular shape. So eventually I, you know, started 3D printing them, and you can see sort of in the progression in the Morris County ones that some are a little rougher looking, but some are really pretty sharp. And a lot of that is the progression over time of just improving over like maybe the 12 months that I did this.
So I mean, isn't that down to just having a really, really well made optimum size pinhole, or is the actual design of the pinhole camera, the solar can camera, is that a factor as well? You've mentioned semicircle, but you know, pinholes can be really sharp if you optimize mm-hmm. that distance, don't you know, the aperture size to the plane of film or paper.
Yeah, so there's a couple things that I think that the thinking about the design of the container itself helps with. Mm-hmm. I really put a lot of thought into making them waterproof and in holding the paper very still. Which these things, it ends up getting more and more marginal the sharper you get, but like those little things start to matter.
I suppose so. If you're leaving these things out in the wild, as you clearly are, you know, someone or a bird or a creature, a squirrel or something, could knock them, couldn't they?
They certainly could. But so that was another learning from the Morris County project. How do you secure them properly, right? Yeah. Zip ties, tape, right? What works well, what doesn't. I usually use a little bit of silicone, which works really well. But I think of this project as sort of like learning. It was a great way to spend COVID. It was a productive, constructive thing to do. It got me outside. It got me engaging with like the place I grew up and live. And yeah, it just taught me a lot about this, how to do it, and how to get a little bit better at it each time.
So your subjects for Morris County were fairly disparate, I think, really. There's some sort of road signs and some buildings and some church graveyardy things and some trees.
Yep.
Some tall pointy things. So did you just sort of go around places that look kind of interesting, or?
There's a couple places I liked. So here in Morristown, the center of town is this little old colonial era square called the Green, and it's owned by a group of trustees. It's a public park, but there's trustees who sort of manage it. And I think it's a consortium of families who've been in the area for centuries. And so I actually approached them and got permission. And stuff like that, and I got permission to put these up there. I really like that. And then there's a couple other that I really liked. We have a large wildlife refuge called the Great Swamp. That's where some of the trees, those images came from. And I worked with the group there, the Friends group, as well as the federal government there, to get permission and do permitting and put these up. And they did a little exhibit afterwards. So some places were randomly like. Just places I knew from my childhood, but other places were areas in the county that I thought were particularly interesting that I wanted to more formally engage with. It just a bunch of little places around that I know and like.
So as you started doing more of this stuff, did you start sort of thinking more philosophically about the whole process and what it meant to you by capturing time in this way?
Oh yeah. I think so. Like, especially again during COVID, it was such a strange time, and I knew it was a nice project to do during a weird time, but it was really nice, especially as vaccines started rolling out, and I don't know, 2020 was really bad, like pretty bad, and things did get a lot better. And so I thought a lot about how these cameras captured that period of time where the world was getting a little bit brighter every day. And yeah, that became like what this project was about for me, I think.
So you took some of these ideas and you used the Morristown, Morris County project to sort of hone your skills, really, hone your art. And then you must have thought, well, okay, what do I do next?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So the reason that I got into lighthouses, which we could talk a little bit about, was... Mm-hmm.
Yep, that was me skillfully leading you into that.
I love it. Okay, so that was honestly totally aesthetic. when I looked at my Morris County images, the ones that stuck out to me all had a tall central feature. So yeah. Church towers, steeples, large statues, like obelisks. I like that for some reason. I think it works really well when you have something that's juxtaposed against those arcs. It's like these nice smooth arcs, and then you have something that really sticks up against it. Those images, I think, just work well. Those were all my favorites.
Yeah.
And my original thought was, okay, this was a cool local project. Why don't I go statewide and do New Jersey? New Jersey has a bunch of cool lighthouses. This would be a great looking object to do. So I picked up the phone, called some state parks, started working on it. And then it just got away from me. So I ended up with, I think, 35 lighthouses in my little lighthouse project, which is called Beacons Through Time. And I just really became taken by them. And, I think I accidentally stumbled upon like this relationship between solar graphs and lighthouses, right? Like there's a light aspect to each, there's a rhythm aspect. There's like this idea of the lighthouses stand there and just have this rhythm of the light flashing. So does the sun going over the sky. So I like that aesthetically, but then thematically the whole thing just worked and I just ran with it.
Yeah. In your introduction, I think it's the introduction to Beacons Through Time, you mentioned patience, constancy, and rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Are three words that you kind of focus on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I really feel that way. Like you think about what these cameras do, and they kind of have to hang in there through a bunch. Like you were saying, like birds, squirrels, passersby, I have to make them to survive it. But when you visit these old lighthouses, it's the same way. And they're getting battered by the sea. Some of them in really extreme weather, and they just kind of take it. And they just do their thing. They just have this rhythm to the light. I think that's wonderful. And I think solar graphs are very similar in a lot of ways.
In the States, then, do lighthouses, are they owned by owned and looked after by a central sort of government authority? Or is it sort of localized? Who looks after them and how do you get access to them?
I have learned so much about this over the past
year. I bet you're now a lighthouse nerd, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. Which is cool, actually. I like lighthouses a lot more after this. It's a fun way to get into them.
Yeah.
A lot of them are navigational aids, which are run by the U.S. Coast Guard, which is a federal military branch. And some of them are owned by the Coast Guards. Not a ton. Some are owned by state parks. Some are run by the National Park Service as sort of cultural treasures. Some are privately owned, and some are museums.
What proportion of the ones that you were using in the project were still working lighthouses with, you know, which was warning mariners not to come too close to the rocks, even though I'm sure there's other more sophisticated ways of warning mariners these days not to come too close to the rocks, but there's still a lot of...
Yeah, that's a great question. Most of them are still formal navigational aids. And in a lot of them, even the privately owned ones, like the Coast Guard has electronics and battery equipment and stuff in there still running a light. And those lights are on navigational charts. You're correct that maybe the need for lighthouses has waned a bit as we have GPS and all kinds of advanced tools. But many of these are still being run.
once the Russians or the Chinese send a big electromagnetic flare up and nuke all the satellites, then you're going to need lighthouses, aren't you?
Yeah, maybe. Some actually, interestingly, the Marshall Point light used to be a Loran station as well, which was a navigational system that predated GPS. So it's sort of a long-range beacon system that they would use. So pretty cool. That's the kind of, the kind of stuff that if we ever lost GPS, we would be scrambling to revert back to. But many of them are still active aids to navigation. Not all owned or managed by the Coast Guard anymore. They're split up between museums and park service and even private owners. But a lot of them still have a little light in there that the Coast Guard maintains.
And in the UK, the last manned lighthouse, I think, was demanned. I can remember it being on the news, and the last lighthouse to have a lighthouse keeper is closing up. But in my head, it's fairly recent, but it's probably 30 years ago, possibly 40 years ago. Yeah. Any of them? I guess none of them have a crusty old bearded lighthouse keeper in them.
Okay, I'm Googling this because I believe Boston Light still has a keeper.
Really?
Okay. Hold on one sec.
And please tell me, like, this old guy with a big white beard and a pipe.
Sally Snowman, who is a Coast Guard auxiliary woman. I don't have a photograph there.
So she hasn't got a big white beard then? Well, she might have.
I don't think so. I don't have solographs there, but that is still manned, which is cool. And they do like little tour guide, like tour stuff there. Wow. That's pretty neat.
Would you like to be a lighthouse keeper, just spending years at a time not really interacting with anybody?
No. No, I would not. But I can certainly have respect for them after this. I mean, this is a critical role they played. And this was hard work. It was really interesting. So this got me access to a lot of places that I probably wouldn't have been otherwise, climbing up old lighthouses. I really feel lucky that. So I got permission from every site I did this from.
So what was the first one you thought of using in the project? And did you initially think that you'd be able to just go and pursue this project without getting permission? Is it possible to like approach these lighthouses without sort of trespassing and set up a camera, or do you need to get close enough that you would otherwise be trespassing, so you have to get permission?
I'm sure there's ways to do this without trespassing, but I actually liked getting permission from all these, and I would say it worked out for the vast majority of them. I had very few that said no.
Who did you approach first then?
It was either Sandy Hook Light here in New Jersey, which is the oldest standing operational light in the country. Or it might have been Montauk Light out at the very tip of Long Island, both of which are in the project. I liked actually getting permission. I mean, there was definitely paperwork and stuff involved, but it was so much fun meeting all these people, and I learned a lot. And
what did you say to them? Did you just phone them up or send them an email and say, did they think you were just some crazy loon or?
Probably. At first, some maybe did, but most got it. One of the nice things about having a little project site, so my little website isn't meant to be commercial or anything. It's literally just a project site where friends and family can see pictures of hikes they've gone on with me, or for the general public to research stuff or whatever. But one of the nice things about it was really easy to reference.
So you could say, this is the stuff I've been doing, and now I want to do it with lighthouses.
Yep. And people were really receptive to that. And a lot of these places have relationships with the arts. So I'm actually the resident artist at Fort Sumter and Fort Moultrie National Historic Park down in Charleston, which is all about they said, hey, let's you could be our resident artist this year, and we can try this out, and we'll kind of work together on an art partnership. Kind of things were pretty common.
So have you gone down there as an artist in residence and had like open days where people come along, kids or adults or whatever, and you talk about solography and how to make a pinhole camera?
I haven't done an open day, but we're going to announce soon that I'll actually be giving a talk there in early October about half of it's going to be about arts in the parks. And then I'll talk a little bit about this project down there. But those are the kind of opportunities you only get by making a phone call.
Reaching out. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Yeah, I really look, you can totally do guerrilla solographs too. You can just pop them up. But in a lot of ways, it was fun to meet all these people, to reach out to them. It opened up cool opportunities for me. It was, I don't know. I've been doing this for about 18 months, this project now. I'm just closing it out now. It's late summer 2023. And it has been a total joy. I've driven a couple thousand miles. I've been up to Maine and back 3 times, down to Georgia twice and back. Stopped all over. It's been an amazing adventure, and people have been so nice and receptive. And so
yeah. Typically, how many cameras are you setting up at each location?
Do at least 3, right? So one of the things about solographs, as opposed to other forms of art, especially modern digital photography, is I really don't have a lot of control over this and how it goes. So a lot of it, I think, is curating several results down rather than nailing one good shot up front. Mm-hmm. I put a lot of thought and time into the design of these things. And then obviously ruggedizing them, trying to make them weatherproof, waterproof. And then I think a lot about where I place them, but then it's like a roll of the dice. I mean, some didn't make it through. Most did. But some of them got taken down or vandalized. Others were, we actually had a huge storm come through right around Christmas of last year, 2022, that knocked several off. Like, it destroyed a seawall up on Watch Hill Light in Rhode Island and just pulled all my little solographs into the sea. I can't control that. There's nothing I could do about that. But I put a bunch up sort of as to hedge risk. And so long as I get one or two that make it through, or a couple that come through, I can curate down to a really, really good shot.
So you're putting 2 or 3 in pretty much the same location, or you're putting 2 or 3 in slightly different locations?
It's mixed. It also all depends on an angle, right? So, yeah. So anyone out there who's interested or has done solographs, where you are on Earth really matters. I think this is kind of cool too. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, the sun is biased to the south, and vice versa if you're in the Southern Hemisphere. So I knew none of them could face north. I simply would not get sun art. Maybe I would get a little peek at the top of the frame in the very high summer, but it's unlikely. So they all had to face either east, west, or most likely south. Mm. Now, I'm on the east coast of the U.S., so facing them west was tricky. I mean, I'd mostly be in the ocean facing them towards the land. So some I was able to face west if they were like in the bay and stuff like that. But so the angles were a little bit constrained by that. And I would visit these sites. I would scout them out ahead of time using maps, or I would call the sites and kind of get their advice on where we could place. And then I would go around and try and pick a handful of spots that I thought would be both a good composition, would survive vandalism, weather, et cetera, and would be properly positioned for kind of their location and orientation. So, yeah, it was a mix. Some I'd put in the exact same place because I only had like one realistic spot to put them. Many I put a ton up. And I hide them pretty well. Most sites ask me to hide them.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you? I think we talked about this with Heather, and I mean, her approach from memory is, some of them just get vandalized if folks see them, and sometimes the weather gets in, and she kind of embraces the fact that the weather has got in, and that adds. That's not what your project was about, but hers is about. Much more about interacting with nature, isn't it? And if the weather gets in, well, that kind of adds another dimension to the image.
I take a pretty different approach. I really respect what she's doing and I love her work. I'm a lot more uptight about not getting water in mine. Although I will say some did, and it definitely added to it. I have one from Portsmouth Harbor Light up in New Hampshire, and water got in, and it really added to it. It makes it feel nautical, right? So I don't know. Maybe I'm loosening up a little bit.
You need to, you know, as an artist in residence, surely you should be embracing all these elements. Yeah. I'm looking down on your Primitive Pines website, and I was looking at Marshall Point Lighthouse, and these are great. So not only technically are these some of the, from what I've seen of photographs and my effort, which was pretty poor really, I think it looks like you've positioned a solograph on some kind of wooden boardwalk with railings.
Yeah,
and there's like a rail, and the railings are really well defined. Okay, you've got the distortion that you'd get, and then you can see the lighthouse in the background, and huge amounts of Sun Trails. The one in the middle, entitled 326, Solagraph 326, 0.2 millimeter gold pinhole, 25 millimeter semicircle Solagraph enclosure. So the is there somewhere on your site where you've got like a picture of one of your cameras? Or,
you know, I just wrote a little article and it got published in Emulsive. There's a link in news.
Yes. I shared.
And that is a really good spot to get a sense of exactly like the geeky details of how we put this together.
Yeah, because you keep talking about that. And then I thought, well, I'm sure I've seen a picture of it. And it's in that Emulsive interview, which you did just recently.
Yeah.
And for folks who've got who part of our Facebook group, and I know not everybody does Facebook, but the Lenses Podcast Facebook group, last week when we were supposed to be doing this recording, I did share the link to the article from emulsive.com. But anyway, if you Google emulsive.com and type in Christian Fiedler or Primitive Pines or Beacons Through Time, you'll find it. And that's where I saw the photograph, because I knew in my head, I thought, well, I'm sure I've seen some photographs of these.
Yeah, they went through a lot of design iterations. I think those little 3D printed ones are on my 11th version, major version. So I keep trying to update them and keep trying to nail them and get them a little more sharp, a little more weatherproof, hold the paper a little bit better. So
I think what I like about these Marshall Point ones, particularly that middle one, is compositionally as well as artistic. Yeah, so you've got you've got your Solagraph, but compositionally it's so strong. I mean, it's the sort of thing that you do with a normal pinhole camera. You know, you'd put it on a railing because you'd get super wide close up receding boardwalks, and then the lighthouse. So this is exactly what you do with a normal pinhole camera, except that you've left it there for 6 months or whatever.
So I worked with Nat up there at the Lighthouse Museum, which is absolutely worth a visit if you know anyone's in Midcoast Maine. It's a really cool spot, and it was in that movie Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump is running across the country, and he's going to all these places running.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, he runs out on the walkway on the bridge. And
that's the one.
To the lighthouse, turns around and comes back in one of those scenes.
So this is a walkway that goes all the way to the lighthouse, is it?
Yeah. So the way this is set up, this is kind of jutting out into the bay. But it's rocky, and you can see that in some of these images. It's rocky below.
Yeah, you can see it. Yeah, because you've obviously got one can, which it really can't be hidden away. It's almost you must have strapped it to one of the posts. So
exactly.
Would you have had folks walking past that regularly? I mean, I don't know what sort of traffic.
Tons. Yeah, that walkway is actually pretty. People walk up and down it all the time. This is the one in the middle that you're talking about. I did not think was going to survive.
No, did you? Well, with that one, I'd have been tempted to say, if you put a sign on it, say, please do not touch, is that like putting a big red button on saying, please don't push this button? People are going to.
I mixed it up. So some of them I actually did. I brought a label maker with me, and I would put approved solar art project, like, please don't touch. Yeah. And that worked okay. But the best ones were just ones that I made blend in and look like just a little nothing attached to something. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, this one survived somehow. Okay, here's a funny thing. Again, like I said, like I really don't have a lot of control over how these things go. But I poured so much time into placing these. Again, I think I drove, thousands of miles and spent all my vacation time doing this for like the past year and a half. So I was a little uptight about whether these things were going to survive. Ones that I thought were going to survive well. So I have no way to monitor them live. But with social media and the web these days, some very busy places, I was able to look at public, say, Instagram tags for the lighthouse, and I was able to see people every day posting public pictures, and I could look in the background and be like, oh, it's still there. Like, look at that little box on the fence. Like, it's still there. It was so funny. Like, I had a lot of friends join me on these trips, and we'd be out at night, and I'd be like, oh, like, let's check in on the thing we just did three months ago. And we'd pull up, we'd find public pictures or Google Maps reviews, and we would see these little things that we like zip tied and duct taped to the walls of these places, and they'd still be up, and we'd cheer. So I kind of did. I was able to monitor these live by sort of leveraging how prolific some of these places were on like social media and online. And this is one of those. Like I remembered 3 months ago, 4 months ago, right before I picked these up, looking with a buddy of mine who came and placed them with me, and we found this picture someone posted of this walkway heading out to the lighthouse, and you can very clearly see in the bottom right corner this little black box like attached to the railing, and I'm like, oh, it's still there, like, yes. So yeah, pretty funny.
Looking looking down a bit further, another location. This is completely different. So this is at Portland Headlight, Cape Elizabeth. 148 days of exposure, and this is completely different, but I really love it. It's a sort of, it almost looks like a sepia or salt print landscape with salt marshes, and you can see the lighthouse, which is fairly insignificant in the photograph really, but being tall and pointy, you can sort of see it, and the arc of the sun clearly above it, and that's just a completely different image, but one that's rather beautiful.
Yeah, and you and get I a love sense the, of moisture. Yeah. Can you see the moisture in the paper? So this is where, like, my heroic efforts to try and stop any bit of moisture from getting in failed, but that's okay. Like, you definitely got a little bit of water on it, but it definitely adds to that. Like, I really like the way you described that, like salt marsh. Yeah, there's like these weeds in front of it, and the water comes in and out, and it feels more aquatic with some of the splotches on the paper. I liked how this one came out too.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And the other one that I saw below that, which is Portsmouth Harbour Light, 147 days of exposure. I just can't believe how, I mean, it looks like you've taken this photograph almost with a digital camera, you know. Or with a normal lens camera. I don't think I've ever seen a solargraph, right, with the main body of the image. So yeah, the light trails are light trails, you know, they all kind of look the same really, mostly. But what this lighthouse and the whatever it is, I think it's some kind of window or archway or something, is bitingly sharp, and
isn't it? Yeah, I was okay. So my jaw dropped when I opened this one up. There is a moment with photographs. Again, you put all this time and thought into it. You wait, and then you finally recover it and pop it open. You can see before you scan it if it's going to be good or not. You can usually tell.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't like a fuzzy paper negative type image. This is.
No, when I popped it open, I was like, man, yeah, we got a winner. It's a great
This is like a film pinhole image, you know, with a super sharp reality so subtle, or Mike Walker laser drilled pinhole image on film, not something that you've had in situ for 148 days on a bit of paper.
So we can talk about that, but I actually do use laser drilled pinholes. And that's probably part of
That's going to help. That's going to help, but that's not everything. Clearly,
the other thing was this was a really big one. So if you look at the size of the container, these are my like jumbos. So 65 millimeter is the radius, and it's a half circle. So these are maybe.
It's almost like large format.
The size of a shoebox. So it's not that different from like a. It's probably around the size of an 8x10, and because of that, I mean the. The detail resolution is
right. Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah, so the bigger the negative, or the bigger the paper, the more detail you're getting by the looks of it.
Yeah. So we're looking at image 230, and here's another cool thing I'll point out. Here's another reason I love like solargraphs. Remember I mentioned that Christmas storm that totally battered the East Coast in 2022? So you can actually see here. There's a walkway that went out to this lighthouse, and if you look closely, it's transparent. That's because that when I place these. Like that walkway was there. I went up in the lighthouse. I worked with Jeremy, who's the head of the group there, and he's been awesome. And we went up into the lighthouse. I've met him here several times. Christmas comes, and that little bridge just gets washed into the sea. And the rest, so that's about halfway through this exposure. This was, September to maybe, September to February. Halfway through, that goes into the ocean. And the rest of the exposure is taken without it. And so you can see through it and you get the sense of it's ghostly and you get the sense of change in there. And that also, and if you look really closely in the background, you can see there's a little lighthouse called Whaleback Light, as well as a life-saving station out in the ocean.
Yeah, I can see something. I can see something through the railings.
Yeah, the bridge getting washed away, actually revealed these other lighthouses out in the harbor. And like, this is another thing I love about these photographs. Like there's a story here. Like there's something happened during this time, and you're able to see it if you look at these little subtle clues.
Has anything like that happened on any of the others where there's an event happened which has somehow made its way into the final image?
Okay, so one that I really like, it's a subtle one, but I'm really taken by it. There's a lightship. So apart from lighthouses, the Coast Guard and before that the U.S. Lighthouse Service commissioned lightships. Basically, oh, yeah. Think of a boat, an endurance boat.
Yeah, no, we have them here. They're all painted red.
Yep.
These days that you find them parked up in harbors. I don't think they're much used, but you do mm-hmm. still see them.
Exactly. So we have the same thing here. And I have two in this project, and one in Delaware is just wonderfully preserved. It's LV-118 Overfalls in Lewis, Delaware. And that was cool in the get because it's parked on a silt bed. And when I was originally talking to the folks at the Overfalls Foundation, they were like, they understood it. John there, he is a photographer. So he got really quickly what I was doing with this, and he was able to understand the idea of a hyper long exposure. And his trepidation was like, hey, this is like on a tidal river. Like this might move a little bit. What's going to happen? And I said, hey, let's take a shot and see what happens. And I put some solar graphs looking at the ship and some on the ship. And if you look closely.
Hang on a sec. So this is Overfalls. So this is images 354, 349. Yep. 347, 344. Okay.
So the second one of those series, 349, is of the ship. And it's a little fuzzy. Like you get the sense that it is rocking. It's not a ton. It's on a silt bed. It's kind of stuck.
Yeah.
It moves just a little bit. And if you look at the arcs, they're really smooth. So this holograph is very strongly affixed to the ground, the earth. Those lines are smooth. The boat moves a little bit. Now look at, say, the one right before it. If you look at... Sorry, I'm scrolling here. Solograph 354. This one's placed on the deck. Look at the lines. There's all these strange little squiggles. There's all these weird spacings. The ship itself is crystal clear because it's mounted to it. But what's happening is...
Yeah, you've got the masts sharp and some kind of light on a tripod, and that's sharp, isn't it?
But look at the lines. So what's happening is... And you can even see the sequence. Like... The tides are coming in and out. You can actually see sequences where the curves aren't perfectly smooth and they fall really sharply. So that's a tide going out and the boat dropping a little bit and tilting a little bit. And you can also see times when the tide is up and some of those sun lines are not particularly smooth. They're all squiggly. Like it looks like a very squiggly line. It's because the boat's rocking. It's like kind of unseated from its silt bed on the tide.
From one of the, on the left-hand side of this image, there's one of these beacons on a tripod, and at the top of it is some kind of little arc or little black curved line. Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about the sun arcs themselves.
The sun arcs themselves.
In 354, they're like a mess. They're all squiggly at regular intervals.
Right.
Not
okay.
These nice smooth lines. And it's because what's happening is every couple of weeks, the tide is moving in this pattern. It's lifting the boat up and it's shaking. And so contrast it to the image after it, like nice and smooth, fixed to the earth. Before it, there's this story.
Right. Okay. No, I'm with you. Yep.
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's all these little tiny subtle clues and solar graphs that are telling you. So I guess one thing that we learned is that, yes, this boat is still moving. It's not that stuck on its silt bed. And like it really is sensitive to the tides, and you're able to pick that up by sticking one of these things here for 5 months.
And the other lightship, I think, is Liberty Landing Marina or Liberty. So there's a really fuzzy boat on this one. That's obviously moving quite a bit, or something's.
Moving. That's a lightship Winter Quarter. That's right here in Jersey City. If you look at that second image, 205. I like this one a lot. It's moving a ton. So that boat really is, it's very much not on a silt bed. It's the headquarters building for the marina, actually. And so it moves quite a bit. And then if you look right in the middle of the image, you can see the new World Trade Center. Smooth and sharp.
Yeah. So this is, this is awesome. So you've got this skyline.
That's New York City.
You've got a pretty defined New York skyline across, in just off center in the middle of the image. You've got this pretty sharp sort of jetty walkway. You've got this boat with quite a huge hint of movement, and you've got the sun lines. So when you set that up, did you think oh, there's New York skyline. That's going to look really cool. Or did you just not really think about that?
I did. I positioned this one. I didn't center it on the boat. This one was interesting. Again, we talked a little bit about like how challenging it can be based on where you are, the hemisphere, and just the surroundings to get good placement. There was no way to really get a southern shot here because it was all water on the other side of that ship, and that's north of the ship. So there was no way to do that. I knew I had to kind of cut the difference, and so I aimed it pretty much due east. And that I knew would get me some of the sun kind of on the right side of the image and the boat on the left. So I didn't know it was going to come out this well, but I was trying to kind of compromise between getting some of the boat, getting some of the skyline, getting some of the sun. And let me drop another cool hint for any solar graph people on this call. There's some pretty good apps for your phone that help you look ahead of time at the sun's position. So I have one on, I run a Pixel, so I have Android. It's called Sun Position. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those apps where it like, it's similar to those astronomy apps that help you look at the stars, where, but it works in the daytime. It looks through your camera and it has a calendar setting and a time setting and stuff. And you basically look around and it shows you where the sun's arc is from where you're standing right now at any time of the year that you choose. And so what an amazing compositional tool that is for solar graphs. I remember using it here at this shot 205 because I knew I couldn't get the right kind of southern perspective that I wanted. So I said, okay, how much can I angle this to get both the boat and enough of the sun that this will look nice? And I used this app to do so. And I was able to basically set the time to June 21 when the line would be the highest. And kind of cut the difference that way. So yeah, if you're interested in solar graphs and like want to think a little bit about the composition, there's pretty nice technology out there that helps you understand exactly where the sun will be at, you know, the whole any day in the year.
I think that's what I've been looking at this evening while I've been chatting to you. I think that's possibly my favorite number 205 with the New York skyline, the bobbing boat. And particularly as you tell me that how you almost were able to pre-visualize it through the use of that app.
It's cool. It's fun.
That's brilliant. Well, I commend all these images to listeners. yeah, I mean, you can clearly see the progression through the main, through the Morristown project to the beacons through time, which is just a brilliant project. You know, I think
the way
you've combined, you've thrown yourself into this in so many different ways, and I think it's just fascinating. But you can't leave it at this. You've got to go. How many lighthouses are there in the States?
Oh, hundreds. There's so many. There's hundreds on the Great Lakes alone.
You see, I could never do this because I couldn't focus myself enough with one image recording device. You know, do you not just have like a reality so subtle pinhole camera in your pocket?
I don't.
To get a bit more, you know.
I should get one. I know.
Yeah.
No, instead I make these solar graphs. I make them by the hundreds, and I just obsess over where to put them.
Yeah, I know, but and I love your single-mindedness, but man, like many guests I've had in here, I think, wow, I wish I had the patience and the energy to concentrate just on one thing, you know.
No, thank you.
That's I just want to I just want to be flitting off with just bring my RB67 or a couple of pinhole cameras and we'll get some film pin, because compared to solography, a pinhole camera with a film in it is a bit like taking a Polaroid. It's that quick in comparison, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And we talk often in this show of being able to capture time as opposed to just a moment in time, and you know, it's such a well-used, almost cliche now for pinhole photography. But you know, from our discussion this evening, you've not just captured passage of time. You've captured little stories of events that's gone on at the same time, and I think it's rather wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's what I love about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we were going to talk about panoramas, but I don't think we will. I think we're just going to leave it at this rather brilliant project. So, listeners to the show, if you head over to primitivepines.com and see what you think, and I'm sure if you reach out to Chris, then I'm sure he'll be super helpful to you, you know.
And, I'm happy to answer any questions. And, I've learned a lot through all of this.
Yeah, so. And maybe it just sparks ideas, you know, with other folks, because, you know, I think having a project is not everyone's cup of tea when it comes to photography, but whether it's lens photography, lensless photography, solography, it can bring a whole different dimension to your creativity, to throw yourself into something like this. And this certainly is food for thought. Yeah, are you exhibiting images in anywhere, part of your little club with Heather?
So we actually, yeah, so we should talk a little bit about that. We mentioned that earlier, but it's really fun. Heather Palachek leads our New Jersey Pinhole Club,
which that's is it. Really, that's what I was struggling to remember.
Yeah, it's really cool that we have so many people just here in New Jersey who are into this and into it from a lot of different angles.
Yeah,
a lot of different types of pinhole photography, niches within niches, and so we do have an exhibit coming up, I think next fall. So it's almost a year from now, I believe, in Lawrenceville.
Because you had the open pinhole thing, didn't you? That was earlier this year,
yeah,
wasn't it?
That was wonderful with Unique Photo. Yeah. So we will do more as a club soon. Heather has a page on her website for the New Jersey Pinhole Club with the schedule. So you could definitely check that out. And then for my little project, I'll probably have some of that work in there. And I'm chatting with a couple different museums about what might make sense and what might work. It's a cool series altogether, actually. I have, like, my kitchen is filled with prints and test prints that have come in, and it's fun to look at these all together. So I'll probably put something together, but I'm still working on it. And I'd like to do a little coffee table book too. So I'm still kind of working through that.
See, I can't see how you could be this obsessed with something to just leave it be.
Yeah, I know. It's taken up a lot of my life, a lot of my time, but I'm so happy with the rewards. And if I could just make one little plug at the end, I just want to send a big thank you. If anyone who I've worked with on this project is listening to me, to this.
Well, share. Once the recording's out, just send it to them.
Yeah. But people were so helpful, like museum staff, private owners of lighthouses, park rangers. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, most sites were so receptive to this, surprisingly so. And this was, it was such a joy. I mean, the images are great, but the people were so nice, supportive, fun, educational. I mean, the joy of this project was meeting all these really cool people who take care of these amazing sites. And so I just want to send a huge thank you into the world to all these people who helped me out along the way here.
And I think it just goes to show, if you've got your own ideas for projects out there, reaching out to people and just engaging them, you're probably going to get a super positive response. Yeah, so and it takes your photography, your art into a whole new direction. Listen, it's been fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting about these super images. So much more when superficially when I first looked at these. And now to sit down and look at them in much more detail and to hear some of the stories behind them, I think it's just amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No, it's been a real pleasure. So what next then? If you're abandoning this project, is there something else, or are you not really abandoning this project?
I don't know. So, I mean, the secret is that there's actually a few I haven't even placed yet. So it's not really done. I really want to close it out. But
no, you don't. No, you
there's a couple on. In a couple of weeks, I actually have a trip scheduled to go place a few more.
Yeah, of course.
I'll get it closed out, and then I have a couple ideas. I might take a breather from pinhole. I've been playing around with infrared a lot, infrared film. That's a cool way to see the world differently. So I suspect an infrared product.
So. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure, and pass on best regards to Heather and all the other chaps, and I've got some paper to send you in the post. You just need to let me know your address, and I'll get that all packaged up.
Thank you okay. so much.
All right. Yeah, awesome. All right. So till next time, thanks for listening, everybody, and thank you, sir. Real pleasure. Thanks, Christian. Bye-bye.